Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Monday Destiny Unveiled Discovery Conversations. I'm Viviana Sinclair, and I'm grateful to be here with those of you that are with us today, including my partner, Elijah Rael. Welcome, Elijah.
Well, thank you, Viviana, and I'm really happy to welcome everyone else on this call, and we hope to make these an every Monday call. I'm really glad you guys are here.
Yeah, I just want to add that we've scheduled these calls every week, every Monday through Christmas and into the new year through the Holy Nights. And then we're going to reassess. We're doing it as an experiment, as kind of a pilot project, and we want to see what the interest is and if it's serving people, and if so, if they want to continue, and then we'll reassess it at that time. So we're just kind of gauging the interest. And then Elijah, every year at this time, he plunges into the Christmas conference that Rudolf Steiner inaugurated in 1923-24. And it pains him so much that this conference isn't really taken up actively, that there's such rich content in it that is such a turning point for humanity. But, you know, he's sensed early on since I met him that something has happened after the Christmas conference that had that people just didn't take it up or recognize what it was. And we've gotten to the bottom of a lot of that through a lot of research. And I'm grateful to be able to share with those of you who are interested with Elijah and see how it relates to us now, what the relevance was then, and now, then how can we make it alive if we see that something is missing, if we see that that impulse is laying dormant, how can we nurture it along to see? And so that's kind of the aim of what we're about here. And just a couple of weeks ago, we had our Destiny Unveiled Advent Holy Nights visioning conversation, and in that conversation we explored a large context. So if you haven't listened to that, I'd encourage you to do so if you like the content of this conversation, because there was a broader context that was created during that call that really kind of serves the foundation of this call and the calls that will follow the call tonight. So in that call, we talked a little bit about the imagery of Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul and the imaginative descriptions of our soul as a Madonna who gives birth to a spirit child each year at Christmas. And the birth takes place through our soul's ongoing relationship with the creative word. And according to Steiner's perceptive research, we are all being schooled through the cycle of the year, whether we are conscious of it or not, and the karma that we create through our speaking and are listening with one another. How do we hone that? How do we be a vessel for that? So we'd like to open tonight with Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul verse for this third week of Advent. And the verse just seems especially relevant to our conversation tonight. So Elijah, would you be willing to share it with everyone?
Sure. This is verse 36. It's out of our book entitled Divine Dialogue that Viviana and I published. There are sounds from out my being's depths and surges to revelation in secret wise the word of worlds. Imbue your tasks in life with spirit light from me to offer up yourself through me.
Okay, thank you, Elijah. So the question for me listening to that verse is, how do we imbue our tasks in life with the spirit light from the creative word? And how do we offer ourselves up through the word? And I've been thinking about the mood of this verse a lot in relationship to these Monday conversations that we begin tonight. And in the Gospels, Christ says, do not worry about how or what you are to speak or what you are to say, for the Holy Spirit will teach you in that very hour what it is to say. And so if we enter the conversation tonight and in these meetings together with that mood, how can we be present in the moment to be able to speak and listen with one another in such a way that we begin to build a vessel in which the Spirit of the creative word can come through us in a healing way for everyone? That's my question, is how do we do that? I mean, I know in the 12-step program, there's a surrender is the first step on the path, and reverence in knowledge of higher worlds. Can we have reverence and respect for one another and speak from our I being eye to eye? So I'd like to just read the calendar of soul verse one more time or share it so we can listen a little deeper this time. It always helps me to hear a verse more than once if I'm listening to it and not, you know, not having it in front of me. So I'm going to read it one more time, and then we'll take it from there. There sounds from out my being's depths and surges to revelation. In secret wise, the word of worlds. Imbue your tasks in life with spirit light from me to offer up yourself through me. So in this spirit which this verse invokes, I'd like all of you to please enter the conversation anytime the Spirit moves you or you are moved to do so. Because we don't want this just to be a one-way street. We would love to have you participate and share. So anytime, just press, again, *6 on your telephone keypad, and that will put you in the queue, and it'll notify me, and I'll be able to open your line so that you can speak then. So, Laya, I know you've been reading the lecture cycle by Rudolf Steiner entitled Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers, which he gave out during Advent just prior to the refounding of the Anthroposophical Society in 1923-24. Would you be willing to share some of the insight that you've gained in these lectures about the Word and our relationship to it and how it relates to the spiritual nature of who we are as human beings?
Absolutely. I could say a lot about it extemporaneously. I mean, I would say one thing, that lecture cycle itself is so saturated that often you have to read just one paragraph two or three times. And, of course, in taking it up every year, I like to read that cycle each year, starting with Advent. But the truth is, it's really part of a triptych cycle, meaning that the next cycle is world history in the light of Anthroposophy, and then he ends with Rosicrucianism and modern initiation. But I just want to share something here that's out of the lecture dealing with Ephesus. So this is right from the lecture, that lecture cycle, or that particular lecture in the cycle. And he says, when a human being thinks today, he has to think of himself as being isolated in his head. The thoughts are inside and the words come out. The cosmos is outside. Words can only point to the cosmos. Thoughts can only mirror it. But he says, this was not so when the human being was still one with the macrocosm. He then experienced the cosmos as though it were within himself. The word was at the same time the environment, and thought was the element that permeated this environment. The human being listened, and what he heard was world. When he looked away from what he heard, he looked into himself. The word was first of all sound. The word was first of all something struggling to be deciphered. And then he kind of, in the previous lectures, he's really recapitulating occult science, but especially the Earth epic itself, or let's say the fourth incarnation of the Earth globe. And he recapitulates these first three cycles of the Hyperborean epic, the Polarian epic, then into the Lemurian. And he's going into incredible detail about how the mineral realm is really forming, and then how the plant realm is forming, and then, of course, the animal. And he says these incredible things about the metals themselves, how the metals were there within that Earth globe. And he said that he says, when one clairvoyantly encounters them in the past, that the metals themselves started to speak. So I'm going to go further, some more things, what he's saying in this paragraph, and I hope some of it doesn't land where you don't understand it, but we can do our best here. So he says, the creation of the animals was a manifestation of something struggling to be deciphered. The animal kingdom arose, he says here, in this chalk element as a question. He says, human beings looked into this silica element, and the being of the plants gave the answer out of what it had received as a sense organ of the earth. And it solved the riddle set it by the animal kingdom. So here they're having this conversation back and forth. He says, the beings themselves solved each other's riddles. One being, in this case the animal, put the question. And the other being, in this case the plant, gave the answer. And the whole world became speech. And then he leads this into the beginning of John's Gospel. And of course, the first couple of verses. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and a God was the Word. He says, it was the creative essence, or he says, and the Word was God, because, I like this, it was the creative essence in everything. So he says here, it's really and truly so that the teaching given to the pupils of the mysteries of Ephesus contain what led to the beginning of St. John's Gospel. And here let me say that the time is fully ripe for anthroposophists to turn to these secrets lying hidden in the soul. And what he's going to do, he's going to lead that into a conversation about the burning of the Gertianum the previous year, 9 months, or let's say 11 months going back. And what he's wrestling with in his soul is this question that Ida Begman had posed to him the night of the burning of the Gertianum, which was, can the mysteries be refounded? But I just really want to pause there and see if we can develop a conversation from that. And so, anybody on the line, dear, are the mics open?
No, I have to. I think it's we just open them one by one.
Okay. So.
And I'd just like to comment a little bit, Elijah, because you just said a lot there. And what was alive for me when you were speaking, and we haven't rehearse this, or, you know, I didn't know what Eli was going to say for sure, but I just see so succinctly that he is giving this relationship in regards to Advent. Like, I love that you brought up the animal kingdom tonight, because this is the third week of Advent, and it's really about bringing a new eye consciousness or connection to that animal element that's a part of all of us in our soul life, and raising it to a different kind of awareness. And Rudolf Steiner was so incredible that way, that he overcame the separateness in his own consciousness, and I'm guessing his consciousness was very different than most of ours, because he brought his individuality, he kept his individuality and brought that back. you know, forward again, but then was able to re-ensoul the mineral kingdom in a new way, and even the very beginnings, the origins of, you know, of our spiritual essence back in, you know, in earlier lectures. And so what I'm getting, Elias, is that he was, again, like coming back around and reforging the mysteries in a new way, like you're saying, where Ida Wegman asked him, like, how can the mysteries be refounded? Well, we had to go to sleep. Humanity had to go to sleep for a while. It had to lose its connection with the spiritual world and with the spirit, with its even its spiritual origins and the connectedness that we all have. Like there's a tableau that we talked about in the last call that all of us, when we develop an imaginative cognition, we can begin to see, step out of time and begin to see the past, present, and the future in a new way. So, yeah, so we'd love to hear from anybody who would just like to offer a reflection or say how it lands with you, what you've heard. So I'm just going to, anybody have, and I'm wondering, I don't know, let's see if I could.
Well, let's just give them time that, To if there's something that was shared here that inspires you. And, dear, what do they have to do? They press *6.
Uh-huh.
And that way, what, they step into a queue?
Uh-huh.
All right. So that means that if two or three of you have a question, we can take them one at a time. Or if there's even just one, we can take that question and go further with that.
Anybody? Well, maybe we should share a little more and give a little more substance, because I know that, oh, here we go. Somebody from North Carolina, it looks like. All right, hold on here. Okay, your line should
Hello?
Be open. Hi.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Who is this? Are you still there?
She was there. Hello? Did she unmute herself?
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Oh, good. I don't know what the problem. I just want to raise one question. I'm still stuck on the word sound. The background on the concern or question to make sure I'm understanding, having read some about sound and harmonics and so on, can you more fully discuss the word sound in the verse?
Oh, in the verse.
Oh, it says, there sounds from out my being's depths.
Yeah, you could also, what was your name again?
It's BB.
Oh, BB.
Yes.
Well, again, that's like a mystery within the mystery, because what he's sharing here is, if we go back to the Saturn epic that's talked about in depth in Occult Science and Outline, that something proceeds out of the spaceless and out of timelessness into space and into time, where the thrones are forming into being the rudimentary beginnings, let's say, of our physical body.
Okay.
What's preceding that, though, is thought, cosmic thought. And because it comes out of beings of the highest hierarchies, it there's an oscillation that's taking place. So it's moving something. It can move into space. It can move into time. But it's really not yet matter. like we think of matter, but when you think within the verse where it says mm-hmm. there are sounds, meaning mm-hmm. there's something moving within us that is preceded by a thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'd just like to add that, I mean, Rudolf Steiner's whole, I can see his relationship to Ephesus and where in Ephesus it was the last mystery temple where the men and women were created equally, and the naming of things took place there. A lot of the naming, they would give a name to something through the sound, through what was sounding out of the environment, and imitating that. They had a very different connection to the etheric world than we have now, that then they were able to form these sounds and give names to such. And I can see that that Rudolf Steiner, in his own journey this last incarnation from a very young age, was looking at this, just what you talked about, this thinking capacity, and how, you know, he had this natural perception of the supersensible world, but he was very lonely because there were very few people that he could talk to about it. And so his whole mission and his task was to forge the path from thought to word to the heart and to the deeds. And if you read the Knowledge of Higher Worlds from that perspective, you can see this, you know, starting from the reverence and the crown chakra, and then, you know, like moving through the body, until he's saying we're listening very deeply out of our will, that there is an intuition that can arise out of our will. And when we are able to listen at that level, something arises that begins to rise back up and activates what he calls the etheric heart, and that brings us back into connection again. And I believe he was the first to do that, I mean, that I know of. Maybe there are other people, but he certainly was the first to bring it into spiritual scientific terms where we can understand what he's talking about and follow that path. And so there is this progression from thinking to heartfelt thoughts, and when the heart begins to have thoughts, and then into the intuitive will, and then rising up again into this, activating this beginning of the etheric heart perception and the capacities for love, which are only beginning to really form, and to be able to see the reappearance of Christ in the etheric through the etheric heart capacities.
Mm-hmm. Very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your question. Good question. I think a lot of times we take a lot of these words for granted, and it's nice to be able to get vigorous with them. So thank you. Appreciate that, Bibi.
Yeah, Bibi, mm-hmm. If I could add more to that, if you would take that verse uh-huh. and if you picked up just a couple of the lectures on the Hibernian mysteries, see, look at how this verse goes. There's sounds from out my being's depths. And I already can tell you intuitively that he really means that he is connected right there with the mineral element of the earth. He can find his way into the metals. And then you look at the second line, in surges to revelation. It's like he had a conversation there with the metals. And he said that the metals speak to you of earth's history. It literally stored the memory of Earth evolution within itself. And then look at, it's a secret. He says, in secret-wise, that what surges to revelation in a secret within his own soul is the word of worlds and how it works through time and space. And then the last part, it's a revelation between he himself and the Christ being. In all of the verses in the soul calendar, he never mentions Christ by name. But look at this, with spirit light for me, that's Christ speaking, to offer up yourself through me. So there's an invocation there for anyone really reading that verse as a Michael student to find what they came down to the earth to do and to do it.
Mm. That's serious stuff.
Yeah.
Mm. Wonderful. Wow.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that question, Bibi.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mm. Anybody else, Viviana, with a hand raised?
No.
Oh, my God, we've made him speechless except for Bibi.
Slow learner over here.
Okay. Well, maybe Elia. Oh, Paul just hold on here. There we go. Oh, okay, Paul.
Well, I come from a scientific background, and I have always been intrigued by the word sound, because in our experience on Earth, we don't have sound without air. And so I would like Eli to speak a little bit about Steiner's use of the word sound.
Well, Paul, he did go into some depth with all the elements, fire, earth, air, and water. And I think you'd find it intriguing to pick that cycle up. I don't have it really off the top of my head, but I read through it every time I read those lectures. So there is a connection there. In fact, I remember where he talks about when the words go out, he says a part of it goes upward into the air, and then a part of it goes downward into warmth. I mean, to me, some of these things he's saying are just, they're incredible. They're just totally incredible. And I know he wants us to sink back into ourselves and live with what he's saying.
Yes, what I mean is that the word sound is very physical to our earthly understanding, and it is obviously spiritual, the way he uses the word sound in reference to the cosmos.
Yeah.
And I am just trying to grasp a better understanding of that use of the word sound.
Yeah. And you know, within these lecture cycles, he's just got all these incredible relationships that you literally have to, quote, unpack, meaning break them down, because he's dealing with memory, he's dealing with thinking, he's dealing with feeling. And so here he is recapitulating Earth evolution, and then he's dealing with these three realms beneath the human being because they came out of the human being. The archetypal, quote, man. And he's continually drawing these threefold relationships over and over and over in just like the first four lectures. But I can't say much myself other than, let's say, just what's out of my own experience in speaking.
Right, right.
And I really like that this verse that shows up for this call is also the third week within Advent, and it just correlates tremendously with so much that I've been reading.
Okay, good.
So in that light, Elia, you've mentioned these three lecture cycles: Mystery Knowledge, Mystery Centers, World History in Light of Anthroposophy, is it? And Rosicrucianism and Modern Initiation, that you know, the Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers preceded the Christmas Conference, and then there was this event of the Christmas Conference that took place, and then Rosicrucianism and Modern Initiation, you know, he begins that still right within the time frame of the Holy Nights, doesn't he? What do you think the relationship? I mean, how did he? He said that the Christmas Conference could be considered a turning point in time, like that something new was brought into Earth evolution at that conference. And what is the significance of that then and now for us in regards to these? What was he doing with these lecture cycles? How was he leading us? How is he preparing us?
Well, he said we can really refer to it as a cosmic turning point in time. And if we really were to, like, put it on a linear timeline, we would start, really, this is quite incredible, but we would start with what I want to call the third Michael age back in 3000. 17 B.C., 3017 to 2648 B.C. And inside the lectures that would precede this or succeed this in the evenings of the Christmas conference, I think it's the second or third lecture, he goes back and he recounts the story of Gilgamesh and Iabani. And what he's doing is he's revealing to the 800 participants at the Christmas conference his own biography. But I don't want to get too far away from what Paul was getting at, because I want to just come back to that a bit, and then we can segue back to where I left it there.
Okay.
And he says here, this is again out of the cycle on the Ephesian Mysteries of Artemis. And he's saying here, he says, he's recapitulating the opening verses of John's Gospel. And then he says that there can be a link made here to what was brought home again and again to the pupil at Ephesus. And this, again, directly addresses, Paul, what you're saying about speech or sound, because that was the mystery center that worked with the Word to get inside what the Word was. And everything that Rudolf Steiner brought forth in the 20th century has its origin not just in Ephesus, but all the way back to the Gilgamesh saga. But Ephesus was so important because, being the fourth epic, that's not to be repeated, meaning there's a high point there. And so the pupil of Ephesus heard this from the master. Study the mystery of the human being in the small word, the micrologos, in order to make yourself ripe to experience within yourself the mystery of the macrologos. So the whole of Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers concentrates on the macrocosmic logos in its working all the way from the beginning of the Saturn period in evolution, but especially Earth evolution, because he goes and recapitulates in detail, not outline. In occult science, he did an outline, but here in Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers, he recapitulates these first three stages that are repeated, the Saturn, the Sun, and the Moon evolution within Earth evolution, and he goes into incredible detail. And all you can say, I mean, part of what you can say is, oh, my God, if this could be put into film. It may sound sacrilegious, but I think that's where we're going. Because you can then, let's say, take these images in, not just in your thought life or your inner life, but you may be able to do it outwardly as something that can, in a sense, run parallel to Darwinism, which we don't have it yet. But I think, Paul, again, with what you were saying, there's so much that's in there. And I like that concluding statement he says, where the real revelation is that it's the essence of everything, that the Word is in everything, the Word with a capital W.
Right, right.
So if we go back to where I left off with Gilgamesh, what he's doing is he's lived with this question by Ida Begman for 8-9 months. He's traveled all over Europe. He finds everything is in chaos within the society. The membership was not able to protect him from the burning. The Jesuits had already penetrated physically into the Gertianum and burnt it down. And so he's looking to answer the question, can the mysteries be refounded? And he inwardly comes to a conclusion, and for him, he says yes. And then what he's going to do, he's going to then give these three cycles, and in it, he's going to go as deep as he's ever gone into his lecture cycles, and he's going to choose things in the content that is in the soul life of particular individuals that are going to be there in those lectures. Ida Begman and Marie Steiner. And if you recall, anybody that's read the mystery plays or those that saw the mystery dramas, that there's a scene involved where in a previous incarnation, Maria has an exposure to the Hibernian mysteries. Now, within her own being, she has an inner opposition to hearing this outwardly because she's from a totally different stream than Rudolf Steiner or Ida Begman. Rudolf Steiner wants to ameliorate that karma that existed within him as an incarnate, as the individuality Iabani, and she, in that time period, as a temple priestess who brought him into a deeper relationship with the physical world. He lost something there on one side, but he birthed something out on the other side, which was this set him on the path to spiritualized thinking. So in the Christmas conference, where he wants to refound the mysteries, and we look at that expression, a cosmic turning point in time, there's two parallel paths that ultimately meet at the center of the Christmas conference. And one is that he's going to reveal his karma through story, the story of Gilgamesh and Iabani, then the story of Aristotle and Alexander the Great, and also the two of them in Ephesus as Cratylus and Mysia to the 800 participants. What he's doing is laying a foundation there for himself, then in turn, to give the 72 karma lectures. Now, what he hasn't done yet is given out Rosicrucianism and modern initiation. But it's already there in the spirit for him in the future. And the core of the Christmas conference is during the day, he's dealing with the outer circumstances of him joining a society. And he's attempting a last stand at threefolding, where he wants to threefold the society through the Christmas conference. Gertianum Association over on one side in the economic realm, holding title to the land and the building. And over here on, let's say, the other side, if you think of three circles joining together, the newly founded General Anthroposophical Society. And then the principles were the rights relationship that would be held by both entities. But they never recorded, the principles never recorded the name. And within a year and a half, the Gertianum Association, in an extraordinary general meeting, adopted the name General Anthroposophical Society. And what it basically did, and we know this from the court rulings, it imploded the General Anthroposophical Society that Rudolf Steiner founded.
Well, it conflated the society with the Gertianum Association, so it threefolded it, and it just took on the same form that it had pretty I mean, even before he refounded it, the Gertianum Association was still there as a separate entity, and then it became conflated after his, you know, after the refounding, right?
Right, right. But the important thing, I think, for us in the present is that within the Christmas conference itself, if we look to the evenings, he starts this lecture cycle on world history, and it's incredible what's in there. He's tracing two or three incarnations that anybody can go in and research and realize, oh, yeah, Rudolf Steiner and Ida Wegman are there. It's not necessarily the case that he talks at all about Marie Steiner. He had talked about Marie Steiner in occult history back in 1910, and he said he had to suspend those lectures because there was inner opposition in the audience. But he did reveal one important incarnation, and that was as Hypatia in the 5th century A.D. in Alexandria, the pagan philosopher woman.
Well, you better say who you're speaking about because you didn't say...
Oh, I didn't say that that was an incarnation of Marie Steiner?
No.
Okay, I didn't just now then. Because he said he had addressed all these things previously, 10 years ago when he's talking about world history in the light of anthroposophy. But if we share just a little bit about what I would conceive as the new Christmas conference paradigm, and it could be called the new Holy Nights paradigm, is that from the 25th to January 1st, which is the evening lecture, the calendar days, that each evening of the Christmas conference, he's giving them a lecture, and then you have to imagine that everyone goes to sleep that night. And we know that when we leave the body at night, the astral body comes out of the etheric and the physical with the I being in the center, and who's there on the other side of the threshold? Rudolf Steiner. And the other key thing that is occurring in the Christmas conference itself is the birth of Anthroposophia as a divine human being that actually walks amongst us. So here on the left, here on the right, forming a portal into the spiritual world are these two highly evolved human beings. And what are they doing? They're leading the 800 participants up into the spiritual world. And each night, you can see what's going on. If you look at the background, they're moving from one zodiacal constellation to the next, leading it all the way up into the realm of Sophia. And I think Rudolf Steiner asks us to do that as a memory, as a cultic act, every Holy Night, so that we can make ourselves attractive to him. Because what we're really preparing for is a final culmination, if we still believe that it could occur. And he'd already talked about the right entry into the spiritual world in the Hibernian Mysteries, in the lecture cycle on the Hibernian Mysteries. And it's also a title to one of the lectures in World History in the Light of Anthroposophy. And in the original soul calendar of 1912-1913, on January 1st, it says Christ Festival Day. Well, the 31st is literally the hidden 13th Holy Night, because you can draw a Lemnis gauge showing 6 days before and 6 days after the 31st, and you can reverse the 31, and you have 13. And so, as an occultist, a supreme occultist, here is Rudolf Steiner establishing something, and he himself really becomes the initiator of those individuals that are crossing the threshold with him every night of the Christmas conference.
So, Elijah, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit. It's almost 8:30, so we're going to probably close in a few minutes. We're going to keep it a little bit short tonight because I know people's time is valuable, and it's a busy time of year for everybody. But before we do, I would really like to hear if you can talk a little bit about Rudolf Steiner's conversation with Countess Kaiserlinck and how he was somewhat dismayed, I think, after the Christmas conference that it wasn't taken up, and that he really said that the mysteries were now closed until he returns. And I'm wondering how that, like, dovetails with this new Christmas conference paradigm. Like, what can we intuit? What can we take with us as we leave this call to nurture our own and prepare our own soul capacities in this journey ahead? To what can we do to prepare ourselves? And why have you had, like, you've had such a pain around the Christmas conference before you even really knew the history? And maybe you could speak a little bit about that, and then maybe give us some direction or some thoughts to hold as questions that we can relate to as we move through the week ahead and into the Holy Nights.
Yeah, sure. Well, if we just think or live into the Christmas conference taking place, and shortly thereafter into 1924, he reestablishes an esoteric school. And he gives, within 9 months, 19 lessons out of a imagined three classes, but he only gives a partial group of 19 lessons out of just the first class. And also what occurred, we didn't talk about it yet, but on the 31st of the Christmas conference itself, Rudolf Steiner was poisoned. And it nearly killed him. He was able to overcome the poison, but it really separated his sheets. So in a sense, here's his eye being up above, and he's like the puppeteer or the puppet master, and down below are his physical body, loosely knit to his etheric body. But nonetheless, it allowed him a greater, let's say, experience of spiritual impulses. And so he goes forward with Rosicrucianism and modern initiation, and then in turn he starts up the School of Spiritual Science, but he's never able to complete it. And 9 months go by, he gives his last public talk, halfway through a talk on Michaelmas. And then he's silent. He goes silent. But he had conversations with Countess Kaiserlinck, and that probably occurred when he gave out the lectures in June of 24 at Count Kaiserlinck's estate with Countess Kaiserlinck, where the biodynamic lectures occurred. And she herself recorded, it's in a book that she had published, that he had said to her that the mysteries are closed until I return. And so I think if you look at the fragmentary nature of what occurred or what we inherited, and I say fragmentary because after he died, the principles were never recorded. Within 10 years, already there's an impulse within the Vorstand itself to have Ida Wegman expelled. And by 1935, by the AGM, Annual General Meeting of 1935, they actually executed, you know, that impulse, which was to separate Ida Wegman as a member and then take away her leadership of the medical section. And the society has been fractured and has suffered ever since. And I think what we need to do is attempt to work within the new Christmas or Holy Nights paradigm and start to have individuals, wherever they're at, start to live into it, and not like a cookie cutter, but allow your own imaginations and intuitions come, but use the December 24th, January 1st as your outline or as your scaffolding, and relive into these three lecture cycles and see where the vision leads. Because we still have in front of us the words of Rudolf Steiner that many of us would return who were there at that Christmas conference. And we would return for the final culmination. And remember the imagination, or if you haven't, here it is. Ahriman sits in a cave and he calculates and he calculates. But Michael will do the last addition. So with that, I'd like to give you another verse out of our divine dialogue. It's the Christmas verse. I feel the spirit child set free from a spell in womb of soul. The holy word of worlds has in the heart's clear light begotten heaven's own fruit of hope, which joyfully grows towards farthest worlds out of my being's godly ground.
All right, thank you. So what I'm hearing you say, Elijah, is that the Christmas conference is so rich, and the form and process that Rudolf Steiner inaugurated with the refounding of the Anthroposophical Society was so unique and ingenious that we could spend every year dedicated to understanding a portion of it. And then how do we, I think in the next call, we're going to talk more about really like what it looks like on more of a practical level, and how do we begin to prepare the ground for the resurgence of what he intended. You know, maybe the mysteries the mysteries are closed, but I do believe it is a Michael age, and I do believe that with the return of the etheric Christ and with all of us birthing our spirit, you know, this birthing that occurs every Christmas, if we can imagine these 4 weeks of Advent as the contractions for that birth, and that we have this possibility to follow Rudolf Steiner's lead, with the foundation stone meditation, where he talks about the spiritual hierarchies, that we have a path that's laid out before us, and that we can make it practical, that there is something that we can actually bring it in, you know, from our wills, which I believe he did, is reversing this and speaking back to the stars again. So thank you, everyone, for coming tonight. I really appreciate you taking the time to be here, and I just want to let you know that you don't have to register again for any other calls, that we'll let you know, and if you can make it, great. If you can't, we'll send a recording link out, and if you don't want to get reminders anymore, you can unsubscribe at any time. So you're registered for this series, and we'll just stay in contact. And I'm grateful to have had this conversation tonight. So thank you, everybody, for coming. I'm going to open everybody's line so they can say goodnight. And
are there any more questions?
Oh, yeah, let's open it up one more time.
Open up one more time, and
just because we've heard from so few people, it would be nice if anybody... I'm going to open everybody's lines now, and there's not that many people on the phone, and then if you want to... If anybody wants to say anything, just feel free.
I would like to know who's on the line. who's on the call?
I can't see names. I can only see phone numbers.
Oh,
and
okay.
Who are you?
I'm Nancy Poore.
Oh, mm-hmm. Nancy. Hello. Nice to
hello,
hear from
hello.
You.
Hello, hello.
Wow.
Yeah, so interested
Nancy.
In what's happening, but also very interested in how we bring in the Michael LEDs for this time right here and now. Appreciate all the background.
Nancy, I remember when we were in a cafe and you got one of my Ephesian B copper pieces.
I still have it.
Oh, dear, how sweet.
Yes, I still have it.
Sweet.
It was very, very, very meaningful to the bees, even more so now. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but... So appreciate you doing this, and hope to lead to some more thoughts for practical application of how we can show up now.
Yeah, we're going to go into more detail on the next call, so hopefully you can make that, because there's a real scaffolding that can be followed, but most people, if they're not familiar with world history in the light of anthroposophy, they may not get it. But we want to mm-hmm. provide either a PDF or we just walk them through it to get an idea.
Good enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're well, glad to hear you on the call.
Yeah, thank you for speaking up. I'm so happy to, I'm so happy to hear you. So.
Yeah, well, we're still working.
Well, good for you.
Awesome.
Good for you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, she's an old friend of ours from the Sebastopol days.
And Sacramento, or Fair Oaks.
No, was it? No, it was mostly Sebastopol.
Well.
Wasn't it, dear?
Oh, she lives outside of Fair Oaks.
That's right.
Anyway.
Right, she's toward Lake Tahoe.
Placerville.
Placerville, Gold Town. Anybody else have anything to share?
I just want to thank you. This is BB, and I just want to thank you for answering my questions. I feel like a slow learner in the group, but I do thank you so much to take the time to open up further some of the what I consider very, very important comments and contributions that you are making for us all. Thank you.
Well, thank you, BB. And sometimes, seemingly the most simple question can be intuitive there for others on the call to actually listen to the answer. So I thank you for your questions.
Great.
And it's Kathleen Thompson here from Canada, Alberta. And
oh,
just
Kathleen.
Want to thank
Hi, Kathleen.
You. How are you? I'm so glad to hear all of this. You have no idea how lonely it is out here in the hinterland. So thank you so much for bringing this anthroposophy alive. I just love it. Thank you.
Yeah, you got something from it?
Yes, I'm in the anthroposophic psychology program in Fair Oaks.
Oh, psychology program. Wow.
Yeah, we're about halfway through the program, and yeah, just want to keep the anthroposophy alive as much as possible. The question of how do we move this out into the world? Yes.
Right.
So thank you
right.
so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for being on the call.
Yeah, thanks, Kathleen.
We'll see you again soon.
Okay. Anybody else? We got people dropping off the line now, so.
All right. Well, we can say goodbye and thank you for everybody that was on the call. And so we will now be ending the call.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, good night.
Night.